this problem. The state kind of put itself on a diet, and they agreed that we would get used to paying more and more and more towards the pension until we caught up. The pension payments became increasingly greater. We called it sort of the ramp because it went up. But we found that this was too tough to do, and we departed from this in 2005, Randy, is that correct? In any case, we lost our discipline. And in 2002, we stopped making the payments, or we started taking holidays. So to address this situation, last year in the 96th General Assembly, the state created a two-tiered system of pensions for public employees, and the next slide depicts that. This slide shows you that as of January 1st of this year, employees who came on our payroll from that time on were enrolled in the Tier 2 pension program. The Tier 2 pension program is a much, I guess you'd call it light, L-I-T-E program than Pension 1 in a number of different ways. An employee must remain on the payroll for 5 years longer, so the vesting period went from 5 years to 10 years. The retirement age was increased. The pensionable salary was capped at $106,000. I can walk you through this at greater length if you want to know the details, but this is a snapshot of the pension plan that's available to our newly hired employees. But that doesn't address the bulk of the problem. The bulk of the problem are the people who are currently employed. And so this year, the three leaders of the House, the President of the Senate, the Speaker of the House, and the Minority Leader of the House, got together and, actually I think I'm mistaken about this. This is the President Cullerton's bill, but he's decided he will not vote for it. So this is the bill that's coming to us from House leadership. This bill offers three pension options to current employees. The first option would allow an employee to keep their current package of benefits but to pay more for them. The second option would put them in the Tier 2 system. The third option would allow employees to use the self-managed plan, which is a plan available today to university employees, but would reduce the amount that the state would contribute to the self-managed plan. When the details of this legislation began to emerge and we began to understand them, there was a surge of anxiety on our three campuses. And my office, together with Bob Rich's Office of Government and Public Affairs, with President Hogan's leadership, decided that what we would do to explain the bill and address the concerns of our faculty and staff, and also to try to explain kind of what the legislative process would be. We held three pension panels, one on each of the three campuses on two consecutive days. And I met a lot of faculty in that period of time, and I think that getting in touch with the faculty sentiment was very helpful to our legislative strategy. It led us to decide that it was important for the University of Illinois to go on record. So President Hogan went to Springfield in May, gave testimony against the bill, arguing that it would have very disturbing effects on our recruitment and retention efforts. And in substantial part because of that opinion, the bill did not advance. The next bunch of slides I'm going to show you just kind of put our pension package in a perspective. So the first slide shows the average payment that a retiree from our system could expect to take average. I'm always reminded that I need to tell you that our employees do not qualify for Social Security. So this is the whole package for our retirees. The next bunch of slides compare us to our peers. The first slide compares us to our peer group as the Illinois Board of Higher Education identifies them. So each of the campuses, as you probably know, has a separate peer set comparison. This shows you where we are with each campus in comparison to our national peers. The next slide does the same thing. And then the final slide compares us to our Big Ten peers. So in summary, we still face this incredibly thorny problem. It is not resolved. There are continuing conversations over the course of the summer. I'm told the speaker brought in the labor unions yesterday to try to see if there's another plan that would be more acceptable to them. I'm expecting that this will be back in the veto session, and if not in the veto session, certainly it will be back next year, because without a constructive solution to this, the pension payment will get, the section of the pie will get larger and larger and larger and squeeze out other expenses. So what we've decided to do again is to re-engage the IGPA group. They're planning a summit in October. We'll get you more details when the speaker lists are planned, but I think it's going to be a useful contribution to the public discussion of what we should be doing on pensions. So I'm sorry, Chairman Kennedy, you asked me for an upbeat presentation. The first half was good, right?
What's that?
The second half was not so upbeat as you requested.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But, you know, we need to hear all of this.
Thank you.
Or is it time for questions?
Yes, time for questions.
There was a slide there that talked about the pension payout, the average years of service. Can you just go back a couple?
Yep, it's slide 9. No, can you take us to slide 9? I think it's right before this one.
This one.
Is this, yeah.
So the average earnings during the 4 high consecutive academic years of the average of the last 48 months. So we have a ton of, as a result of the changes in senior leadership, that those changes cascaded throughout our entire organization. So there are about, you know, 20 or 25 senior positions that have been filled with interim appointments.
Okay.
Presumably those people received a higher compensation level to take on that interim appointment. At the end of that interim appointment, I assume that if they don't take the job, they go back to whatever they're doing. Does this give them an incentive to then want to retire from the university during this period because they can count the higher compensation towards their retirement?
Yes,
have
I think
we created a perverse incentive to get everybody to quit.
That may very well be the case. What we hear from the State University Retirement System (SERS) is that between the comparison of end of June last year and end of June this year has shown a doubling of applications for retirement, just on the rumor of this bill, not on the implementation. And then, of course, as you point out, there's this tier two effect that's coming on. You know, people I don't know how that works in terms of when people change their classification. I think that once you're in, you're in. Maybe Maureen Parks can help me with this. Does that answer your question?
Not really, but I think it's probably best not to do it in...
Randy, do you have something?
I think your question is, at the end of your career, if you get a big bump in salary to become a chancellor or something like that...
An interim.
And as an interim, if that's in your calculable base, yes, there would. If you reduce back down, there would be some kind of incentive to retire. One thing to remember, too, is there is a federal cap of $245,000, and so if chancellors or senior people are above that, that was grandfathered, so if you were here before 1996, it would not apply, but for senior people, there already is a federal cap on a defined benefit program. Is that answer?
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Kathy? Thank you very
Thank you.
Much.
Thank you.